from the beautiful campus of Texas A&M University. The Sidney and J.L. Huffines Institute for Sports Medicine and Human Performance in the Department of Health and Kinesiology brings you the Sports Medicine Podcast. Our mission is to make sense of and connect the science, practice, and application of the latest findings in sports medicine and human performance to the real world. Here's our host, the director of the Huffines Institute, Dr. Tim Lightfoot.
Hello and welcome to the Huffines Institute Sports Medicine Podcast. We are so glad that you took the time to download us and join us today. We're very excited about our guest. We have Mr. Kevin Hughes on with us today, and we'll tell you a little bit more about Kevin in just a few minutes. But we also want to take the opportunity to tell you one of the reasons that we're interviewing Kevin is because Kevin is one of our featured speakers at the Huffines discussion, and that's where we're bringing in eight leaders and thinkers in sports medicine. We're giving them the stage for 18 minutes and asking them to talk to a lay audience and find out what they're going to tell us. And so if you're in the College Station Bryan area, we invite you to join us on April 1st from 1 to 4 p.m. in Rutter Auditorium to hear what and where sports medicine is going. And so we're so pleased to have Kevin with us on the line today. Hello, Kevin. How are you doing today?
Pretty good, Tim. Thanks for having me on.
You're welcome. Let me tell everybody a little bit about Kevin. Kevin has actually a master's degree in psychology and really has focused in the area of neuroscience, was working on a doctorate in neuroscience, and then life called him away. He actually makes his living as a comedian, quite successful comedian, I might add. He has been named the Canadian Comic of the Year, the Lecturer of the Year, and the Variety Act of the Year in a variety of times. He has worked extensively in the cruise industry over the last, 10, 12 years?
12 years, yeah.
12 years, and he's won a variety of awards in the cruise industry. And so we're so glad to have Kevin with us today because we've asked him, because part of his journey has been as an everyman trying to regain health and fitness and continue to be healthy and fit as he goes through life. And he has an incredible blog called, I think, Kevin at Sea. Is that right, Kevin?
Kevin at Sea at staytogether.us.
Yeah. Kevin at Sea, and that blog talks quite a bit about health and fitness and the approach to try to become healthy and fit. So, Kevin, so you're an everyman, and you're trying to be healthy and fit. And what have you found the biggest challenge to be?
Well, there's several. The first is because you sports medicine guys are making so many discoveries all the time that you're competing with the what I call the popular guys, the popular science people who have. You know, they write a little article for a magazine, and people read that, and then they read the next day, well, eat eggs. Don't eat eggs.
Right.
Okay, well, milk is good for you. Milk is not good for you. Margarine's good for you. It's better than butter. Nope, butter's actually better than margarine. So trying to figure out what to do, well, you should exercise 20 minutes a day. But exercise, for most of us regular people, what they try to portray as exercise is actually training.
And those
are athletes.
Right.
And so to give you a small example, when you had me tested in your lab at 50, and I still remember the brochure, we need somebody fat, flabby, and 50.
I don't think we used the word fat, did we?
No, but that was basically what you were looking for.
Okay.
And, I remember after your graduate students got done with me, one of the summations was, you're very weak, Kevin, but you're weak for a very long time. So apparently I have tremendous stamina for a weakling.
For a long time, right, okay.
Yes.
But it could be worse. You could have poor stamina for a very short time.
Exactly. Yeah. And when they did the stretching part, the exam for that, they all gathered in the corner. I wasn't even on the low end. There wasn't anybody who had been as inflexible as me. One of the things I learned there is one of the graduate assistants, I was on the treadmill. And she goes, are you feeling okay, Mr. Hughes? I said, I'm just fine. She goes, really? Then the other guy came over, and they look, and they talk for a second, and I'm still hooked up and running. And the lady goes, are you sure you're okay? I said, I feel great. She goes, And then that other fellow, the guy that was the other PhD, testing.
I'm not going to name names.
Okay, well, that guy came over, and he goes, excuse me. He says, I know what the problem is right here. He said, please stop the treadmill. They forgot to shave my chest. Because they'd been working with such young athletes that they were all smooth. So they'd never had a fur ball before, try to jog on a treadmill. And just something as simple as putting the leads on wrong, that they were getting readings that my heart was off and my blood pressure off. And it's because they didn't have experience with older people on a treadmill.
Right, right.
So what I compare that to is that's what a lot of this fitness stuff is geared to get you to look like a 30-year-old.
Right.
You know what? You're 60.
Right.
So showing me a picture of an outlier, and that's what I call them, just like in economics, or when you do any kind of research data, you get the extremes. If you're one of those outliers and you show me a 72-year-old man that did the Ironman in less than 14 hours, yes, he did, but 281 million of us couldn't finish it.
Right. Ever.
So, yeah. So getting that, people look at that and it sets their failure rate immediately.
Right. Well, and that's what people don't realize, is so much of exercise science research is based on younger individuals, usually below 40, because then you don't have to have all kinds of medical clearance and crash equipment and so forth available. So that body of literature is based primarily on a younger population, and we have to think of the older population as we test them.
Yeah, because there's 60 million of us, 60-year-olds.
Right.
And because you're an expert and we've known each other for a long time, we talked about this, you got to get out and move. So the idea that I would like to present on your show is, don't try to be a 30-year-old when you're 6 years old. Don't look at what you can't do anymore. If you can't sprint anymore and you can't jump anymore, that's probably part of the aging process. But you could run and jump if you wanted to do the things you want to do.
Right.
You know, you can still play pickup basketball. You're just not going to make the A&M team.
Right.
You know, so, but when you see everybody playing at that level, do you think that's what you have to get to? And the example I like to use for how easy it is to exercise is garden.
Because
if you garden, here's how it goes for somebody my age. Now, I'll be 60 in September. So somebody my age, you're going to plant tulips.
Right.
So you got to wash the bulbs. So you go out to plant in the backyard. You got your little trowel. You dig the holes, and you realize you don't have the tulips. They're by the sink. So you go back in the house. You get the tulips. You come back out to bury them in the backyard. You realize you don't have the trowel, which is now at the sink. So you go back to the sink to get the trowel. You come back out. You realize you don't have any fertilizer. That's in the back of the car. You get back up, you go to the back of the car, you realize you don't have the keys. So you have to go in the house to get the keys. You come back out, and you get the fertilizer. Then you realize you lent your wheelbarrow to Harry. So you have to go to Harry's house to get the wheelbarrow to walk back. Now you realize your keys and the fertilizer are inside the car. So now you got to walk to your neighbor's house, get your extra set of keys, go back in your house, get your set of keys, go back out. By the time an hour is done, you've done bending, stretching, lifting, and walking.
Mm-hmm. All ingredients of a successful workout.
Yes, and you just didn't have a clock.
Right.
So my point for people my age, instead of trying to get on a treadmill and run a six-minute mile, why don't you pick a park that you really like that's near your house and see if you can walk the entire park?
Yeah, adapt.
Yeah. And as you know, we like to go to Alaska.
Right.
So it's uphill.
Right.
And as soon as an American sees anything that looks like a stair or uphill, they stop.
Right.
It's got to be an elevator around here somewhere.
Or an escalator, yeah.
Exactly. But if you go up 2,500 feet and you see how beautiful it is and it's pristine, and you're the only two people there with 15,000 people in town your age,
mm-hmm.
That's frightening to me. It's because they've given up. They see so much on TV, and all these guys have six-pack abs and ripped shoulders and toned muscles, and they figure they can't get there. But if they wanted to walk, they could go up with the very same place where a 1,000-pound, powerful 6-year-old bear can go.
Right.
You could get there. You just can't get there in 20 minutes.
Well, and it comes back to what we said a while ago. You just have to adapt your thinking as to what you can do. I mean, I used to play pickup basketball, recreational basketball, and we had guys that were 70 years old that would play with us. But they certainly weren't under the boards, but they were out front shooting 3-point shots, and they, you know, ran half as much as everyone else, but they were out getting activity, which is what it's all about as you get older.
Yeah, it's just moving. It's like,
right,
something as simple, if you watch TV,
mm-hmm.
Let's take TV for example, because I know you don't watch it and I don't watch it, but a whole lot of people do.
Right. Not much of it anyway.
If you watch 3 hours in a night, which is, I guess, way below the average for the Americans.
Right.
But let's just say you watch 3 hours a night. If you're The average program that's 30 minutes long has 6 minutes of commercials and 23 minutes of actual show.
Mm-hmm.
So you guys, sports medicine guys, and heart people, medical doctors, all say move at least 20 minutes. Well, if you just stood up during the half-hour show and just walked in place, at the end of one show, you would have hit the minimum 23 minutes, roughly.
You can make it like a drinking game.
Yeah.
Every time there's a commercial, you stand up and walk around the room.
Exactly. And or jog in place.
Or, yeah.
Or do 10 jumping jacks.
Sure.
And at the end of 3 hours, even if you just went during commercials, you've exceeded the 1 hour of moving around.
Well, that was a story about Herschel Walker. I remember reading an interview with him, and he used to say he did thousands of sit-ups, but he would do them during the commercials.
Well, and he looked like Hercules.
Sure, yeah.
He has one of the best bodies I've ever seen. I think statues are carved looking like that guy.
Yeah, well, they're either carved looking like you or me or Herschel Walker, one or the other.
Yeah, well, maybe you and Herschel, but if they draw one like me, all you have to do is put feet on a beach ball, put a bald head on top. It's fine.
Yeah, okay.
But what I find for people my age is they look at what they can't do first.
Right.
So when you say, well, just walk a mile, and they go, I can't walk a mile.
Mm.
Well, pick telephone pole to telephone pole.
Right.
Well, I can't go that far. Well, pick to the end of your driveway. You know, you have to start. And I think Americans are so geared to want stuff to be so quick that they don't realize. Let's take me, for example. Mm-hmm. You know that 2 years ago in April, I weighed 242 pounds.
Right.
Now I weigh 195.
Right.
On average, I've lost about 3/4 of a pound a week.
And that's in spite of being on the cruise ship most of the time where you have unlimited food.
Right, where you can come on as a passenger and leave as cargo.
That's right.
I'm beyond that. But it's because I don't try to be perfect.
Mm.
And what I do is, am I feeling better today than I felt yesterday? Did I walk a little farther? Did I go a little faster? I told you before in one of our private emails, there's this little pipe that's 9 feet off the ground on the deck, the promenade deck, where you walk outside. And I could never, my reach is 6'6".
Mm.
So for me to hit that, with even my fingertips, I have to be 24 inches off the ground.
Right.
Well, I finally hit it.
Mm.
But it took me 7 months.
You didn't use a trampoline, did you?
No.
Just clear that, okay.
Yeah, I got the fat moving down, and I used the rebound. You guys talk about the fascia.
Yeah,
I got all the fascia to act as a group concerted muscle, and it lifted me up, and I touched it.
Yeah. Congratulations.
Thank you. So for me, that was a little mini goal.
Yeah.
You know, every day I'd go out on that deck, I'd try a couple times to hit that little thing, and so I'd get closer and closer, and then finally after 7 months, I hit it. But the average American wants to start Monday and hit that on Tuesday.
Right.
And I think for people my age, it took a long time to get out of shape.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to take you, if it took you 5 years to get overweight and become a couch potato, you can probably become reasonably weekend warrior shape in 2.5 years.
Right. But as you said, Americans want it tomorrow.
Yeah, and so I think one of the things you could do is just start moving now. Walk around when you're watching the television or get out every morning and say, I'm going to walk just to the end of the street and back, but I'm going to do it every day. And then my eating plan, as you know, is called one and done. I eat anything I like of any food group of any kind, but I only take one scoop that's the size of basically my palm,
mm-hmm.
and I don't go back for seconds, no matter how much I liked it.
Mm.
And because I don't do that, I only have one of whatever it is, and they're all smaller portions.
Right.
I've gradually lost the weight over the last couple of years.
Good portion control. Well, I guess, though, Kevin, I tell you, you talk about being active and watching what you eat. How do we encourage the U.S. public to do that?
Well, I think you have to, and again, remember, I'm a comic giving advice to a sports medicine guy.
Well, but you know, you have, as a comic, though, you have insights about how life works. And so perhaps you can tell us something that we haven't been doing.
Well, I think there's two things I think from the outside. One is give ballpark numbers.
Mm.
So, for example, if you're lucky enough to be a parent and your kid is not walking at a year,
mm-hmm.
that's no big deal. If he's not walking at 5, you should have probably gone and seen somebody. You know, so give him a ballpark. So,
right.
You know, some babies walk as early as 6 months, some as late as 2 years.
Right.
But after 2 years, if they're not walking,
yeah.
Well, if you tell the average person, you know, you're 35 pounds overweight. So if you can get that down to 15 pounds overweight, you're going to be in the ballpark for health.
Right.
You know, get rid of half your extra body fat. But if you tell people specific numbers, you should weigh 170, and they weigh 205, that's so far away in their mind they can't picture getting there.
Right, right.
You know, so if you just say, how about losing 5 pounds by summer and keeping it off all summer? Well, now you're in a ballpark.
So small goals that they can reach.
Yes, so give them something believable. I mean, if you tell me I'm going to join the NBA, it's not believable to me.
Right.
But if you tell me we could use you as a bench rider in our pickup game, oh, I could get that spot.
Yeah.
And the second thing I would do is find a way to make it popular to get the accurate information.
Mm.
Because the information is always word of mouth.
Mm-hmm.
And word of mouth always confuses things. Because people exaggerate, you know, they want to lose the 20 pounds right away. Like, I know you're not supposed to use names, but Dr. Atkins diet, you will lose the weight. All the 50,000 research papers all say the same thing. But what he did was real tricky. Take that little, the ellipsis, the three little dots and the quote,
mm-hmm.
and then put rapid weight loss and then three little dots and a quote. So he doesn't tell the systemic damage.
Right.
He doesn't tell you about what it does to your IQ, what it does to your kidneys, what it does to your liver. And that's where I think you guys can make a big impact with the average person, is just by going, you know, just drink chocolate milk 20 minutes after you're done working out. And if you're looking for muscle mass, eat some eggs.
Right.
You know, so those kind of little things. If you're going to be a NASCAR car driver, learn how to get your neck strong enough to hold 40 pounds up for 3 hours, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah. Pulling those G's, too.
Yeah, if 3 G's.
Right.
The average head weighs about 16 pounds.
Yeah.
So you're holding 40 pounds up with your neck for 3 hours. You know, most of us drift off to sleep watching TV, which is in front of us.
Right.
So I mean, people don't think of the cumulative effects of your bad health and your good health. If you want to be mobile at 60, you got to start moving in your 50s.
But Kevin, is this something that's recoverable? I mean, not yet. Americans have gone down this road of obesity. Is that something that people can pull back from? Or is that too much lifestyle change for them?
No. I think when you eat like I do with one and done, there is no lifestyle change. I still have a donut. I only have one.
Right.
I don't eat the other 11.
Right.
You know, if I had a Pepsi, which I very rarely drink anymore, but if I do have a soda pop, then that's it for that day.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't matter if, you know, if you're drinking 3 or 4 sodas a day, which is probably pretty average,
mm-hmm.
and you cut down to just one can, if you didn't do anything else during the course of that year, you'd lose 15 pounds.
I know. You think about the calories that you don't take in on a daily basis.
Yeah, so you don't have to do massive things, but you do have to move around. And one of the coolest things to do is just walking, getting out and walking in air. And if you got people you like and you walk with them, you'll walk for an hour talking without even realizing the time went by.
Right.
Yeah, whereas you go to the treadmill, it resembles work.
Yeah.
You're just going to get the 20 minutes. But like, I happen to know you like to play music.
Yeah.
If you're learning to play an instrument and somebody has to tell you to practice, it's not your instrument.
No, it's drudgery.
Yeah. So if you want to get healthy and move around, but I'm not an Olympic runner, but you've seen some of those pictures. I've walked from sea level to 8,000 feet to get a picture of a glacier.
Right.
Well, there wasn't anybody on the journey with me except Kathy.
Right.
Yeah, because
people. And for those people listening, Kathy is Kevin's wife.
Yeah, has been for 31 years.
Yeah.
Yeah. I proposed and I'd have met her, which made her fiance very angry, but I needed a walking partner.
Now, we're not advocating that everyone go out and get a walking partner that way.
No, but going together, part of community, part of the thing that makes you feel good is going out. I live in Cleveland, Ohio now, and they have a park that goes through the whole city. And my best friend, Eddie Hudak, who has been my friend forever, him and his wife, there's like 15, 16 different walks you can do through the valley, they call it, the mm-hmm. Emerald Necklace, the park around Cleveland. And they range from very, very moderate 450-meter walks to 20 kilometers.
Mm.
And they have moderate, heavy, and then strenuous. And then they have don't do this trail unless you're an expert, because you can walk up the side of a cliff to see a waterfall, for example.
Right.
Well, they pick 5 or 6 at the beginning of each summer, and every 2 weeks they go for one.
Mm.
Well, that's not like, you know, running a marathon or, you know, but they're healthy. They can walk. They go see the neighborhood. They get outdoors. They meet a bunch of other people to go for the walk. That's really, I think, getting the idea of exercise as some kind of training thing out of our head and putting it as just a natural thing for the body to do. Your body wants to move.
Right.
It just wants to move.
There are some people that argue that we evolved because we did move.
I would go for that. Yeah. It's just like when people tell me, you're married 31 years, isn't that boring? No, the more you know about something, the more you want to know.
Right.
Well, the more you move, the more you want to move.
Right.
If you have a lack of energy in your life, it's because you're not moving, you know, once you rule out all the medical things.
Yeah. Now, you guys have been getting a lot of snow and ice, and I know one of the things that you've been talking about on your blog and in some of your emails is about the walks that y'all have been taking in the snow.
Yes. And it's very, you know, you science guys, this would be a good study for you sports medicine people. Do you burn more calories walking through 2 feet of snow or 1 foot of sand on the beach?
I don't know.
Because
what do you think?
What I noticed with my calves is, I know you've run on sand.
Right.
All of us athletes, when we were younger, were taught to go run out in sand to use all those little tiny muscles because the sand shifts. Well, walking through snow with boots on, I'm thinking a lot of explorers froze to death because they just said, the hell with it. I'm not taking another step. Yeah, you know. Well, walking through the snow and shoveling the snow is another complete exercise, and yet my doctor says you shouldn't shovel the snow at your age because the cold air can start heart problems.
Hmm.
And I'm like, yeah, but if I don't shovel and I stay inside and I put on 30 pounds and I don't move, it's only a matter of time.
Right. Right. But so it's a choice, and it's the choice that we all have.
Yeah, and I didn't shovel the whole driveway at one time with 2 feet of snow on it.
Right.
I just picked little sections, go in, have a nice talk with Kathy, go in, because I knew at the end of the driveway, I had hot chocolate waiting for me. So
there's your motivation, hot chocolate at the end.
And I got my exercise.
Yeah.
I don't know if you've thrown 20-pound shovels of snow repeatedly.
That's why I live in College Station, Texas, Kevin, so I don't have to do that.
Yeah, a lot of people don't like the snow, but if you're in the desert and you got to walk through sand, it's the same thing on your legs.
Yeah. Yeah,
and if you're tromping through the mud, or you're fishing, and you have to push your boat back off the bank, you exercise all day long having fun.
Right. It's just,
that would be my big point to everybody. Is just go out and find something you like to do and do it.
Just get out and have fun.
Yeah, just get out, walk, play basketball, shoot some hoops. You know, I read this article where the guy said he could improve your 100-meter time by just practicing 40-meter runs.
Right.
And so I haven't run. When I ran in high school, I set the record for the 100 meters because I took more steps than anybody had ever ran it. The coach put down his stopwatch and he said, who's next? And it was me. And he goes, oh, crap, now we need a calendar. And that was for 100 meters.
Yeah.
But the idea of just running for 40, I haven't run in probably 20 years. So I started out really slow and I ran just 10 meters at half my ability, which is very slow.
Yeah.
And over the last month and a half, I've gotten up to where I can run 40, 50 meters where it actually looks like I'm running.
Yeah.
I mean, you're not going to mistake me for a deer or anything. But I got to run, and just the feel of my body moving at that speed for me is a thrill.
Yeah.
I haven't had that since I was a kid. Now, I make sure, I don't know if I should have mentioned this earlier, I have two training goals. One is to never go backwards.
Right.
So I don't want to ever go to 210 again.
Right.
In weight. And that's one of my things. You can't go backwards. The other one is no injuries.
Mm.
So I listen to all your folks who tell me that, you know, for example, the best way to warm up for a sport is the sport.
Mm-hmm. Gently.
Exactly. Just walk around the basketball court dribbling for a little while, then take a couple close shots, and as your shoulders get loose and your wrist gets loose, move away. And then when the game starts, you're loose.
Mm-hmm.
And then after the game, do your stretches. But listening to you guys, I've learned that the best thing you could do to recover is ice, cold water. You know, if you hydrate, just go home and fill your tub with cold water and sit down. Then you don't have to take a Motrin.
Right. Relax.
Well.
Yeah. And make sure you eat protein afterwards. Got to make sure the nutrition side is good.
Yeah. Wait 20, 30 minutes, and then after you're done, get your protein. But have your little glass of chocolate milk.
Yeah.
Your 1% chocolate milk.
Yeah.
So all those little technique tips you learn from there for an aging person, those are much more important because you're not going to recover in 2 days like you did when you were a kid.
Right. Right, because you're not a kid anymore.
Right. So if you injure yourself, which is almost always directly related to your ego, you know, if you're playing a pickup game and you're having fun, and then one kid starts guarding you really tight, and then you decide to drive on him, that's where you pop the hamstring or twist, get the high ankle sprain. And if you get one of those at 60, there goes 5-6 weeks of time, and you go backwards.
Right. So it comes back to recognizing your limits, but still being active and having fun.
Yeah. Think of what you can do, what you want to do. You can dance at 60. You can dance. You can ballroom dance. You can walk. Yeah. You can swim. You can ride a bike. There's all kinds of things you can do. But if you look back and go, I used to be a middle linebacker and I could run the 100 in, 9-7. Well, you can't do that anymore.
Right.
But you could do enough to have fun doing what you like to do.
Right, right.
And for me, it's worked. it's been 2 years since I lost my health, and partially because I took medicines that the doctor gave me for my asthma, but I got side effects from those medicines. And that's another warning I'd like to put out there for not only exercise, but when people warn you, when an exercise specialist or a sports medicine guy says, you know, you should warm up properly before you do your sprints, he's telling you that for a reason. Because if you don't, here's what happens. Well, when you get medicines of any kind and it says, here's the possible side effects, the reason they're there is because somebody who studied this found that people got those.
Right.
Yeah, so that's why.
And it's a possible side effect, yeah.
Yeah, and that's why in the sports medicine field, it's so hard to get the nutrition part is hard to study in the first place. But the supplement industry, which you and I have talked about before, can make any claim it wants.
Without verification.
Exactly. Yeah. And so people take it. And they're like, oh, I took massive doses of this. Then you get kidney stones.
Right.
Because they've got all these extra crystals in their body from the compound.
Yeah.
Or you know, some of them are, well, this will get rid of your arthritis. Well, nothing gets rid of arthritis.
Just alleviate the symptoms a little bit, and that's about it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So that's why it's very important to go to folks like you who are doing a study. But because you guys are scientists, and this is one of the things I think the layman doesn't understand, is science continues to question itself even when it thinks it's right.
Right, because there is no right answer. You just continue to verify the hypothesis.
Yeah, so they might tell you eggs are bad for you. They're bad in this way, but they might be good in that way.
Right, right.
And then that one guy you had on, he did the study and found out that a massive gain in muscle mass if that's what you're doing.
Right.
But if you're the average guy who doesn't want to get muscle mass, then it's not as important of information.
Well, but it was also, he showed an increase in strength as well.
Yes, and I'm glad you brought up strength. When people ask me how come I do so many push-ups and things during the day, I just drop any time during the day when I feel like, oh, my body wants to move harder. Well, if you can just do 10 push-ups and you're 65 years old, you can get up out of a chair.
Mm-hmm.
And that doesn't sound like a remarkable achievement, but a lot of people in their late 60s, early 70s can't get out of a chair anymore.
Right. Right.
Where if they just use, you guys have done many studies, that if you just use light dumbbells, 15 pounds max, and you train for 6 to 8 weeks, you can get out of a chair.
Right. They just need to do a little strength and resistance training.
Exactly. So, you know, things like that are so important. If you do just a little bit of training with light weight, you're not going to look like that ripped athlete you see in the magazine, but you're going to be able to get out of your chair.
Right.
And that's
more important in the long run.
Yeah, and for people our age, it means you can get out of the chair. It means you could go to the bathroom by yourself.
Right. Those things are always important. Well, let's wrap up here, Kevin. We're kind of shortly running out of time here. You want to give us a take-home message for our audience?
Sure. I got one ready for you.
Okay.
Because I've listened to so many of your podcasts.
Okay.
Become your own best friend. I think one of the things, because we talk about muscles, nutrition, respiration, hydration, people forget that's all controlled by your mind, and your mind is controlled by your thoughts. So the example I'd like to use is if you're a woman and you're listening to this podcast, or a man, and you're a little chunky, and your best friend is losing weight, is trying to lose weight, and she weighs 100 pounds more than she should, and she loses 1 pound, you are going to be so proud of her. You're like, you lost a pound. I can't believe it. What'd you do? I went off sodas. I don't drink any sodas anymore. And for 2 weeks, she doesn't have sodas. And then one day she has one soda. The average response is to go, well, I had one soda. I'm a failure. I can't control myself. I have no willpower. Might as well get the 5 liters.
Right.
But your best friend won't let you do that. She'll go, you know, I've known you for 25 years, and you've always drank sodas, and you didn't have sodas for 2 weeks. You're remarkable. I couldn't have done that. That's like quitting smoking. And then you go back, and she says, why don't you start over again? You only had one. Now maybe you can go 3 weeks before you have another one. Your best friend never lets you give up on yourself.
Mm.
But now let's switch it. What if you're the one trying to lose weight? The first day you have a soda, you're going to go, I'm a failure. I can't quit. Because you don't talk to yourself like your own best friend. So if you're going to start an exercise program, or you're going to start getting your body in shape, and you want to be able to move around and go for long walks, treat yourself as you would your best friend. And don't say anything in your own mind talk that you wouldn't say to your best friend if they were fighting the same issue.
Right. Hmm. Good
There's
advice.
My take home for you.
Good advice. And with that, we're going to end on that. Kevin, thank you so much for taking time to be with us today.
Thank you, Tim. Thank you, Justin.
And we thank all of you that downloaded and have listened to us. We remind you that we have a new website up at HuffEinsInstitute.org. If you have subscribed in the past, we ask that you go back and resubscribe through the new website. We've added some new features, and resubscribing will actually help you take advantage of those new features. And we haven't forgotten. We have a question here for the free T-shirt. So, Justin, what's our question?
So, what did Kevin suggest doing while watching TV in place of sitting?
So, be the first one to email us with the answer to that question, and you'll get one of the nifty free HuffEinsInstitute podcast T-shirts. They look good, don't they, Kevin?
Oh, they look great, and they fit well.
There you go. So you can't beat that. So we hope that you all have a healthy and active week, and thank you for joining us.
The Sports Medicine Podcast is produced by Justin Dobson and licensed by the HuffEinsInstitute at Texas A&M under a Creative Commons 3.0 license. You can share it as much as you want, and you can talk or blog about it all you want. Just don't change it or charge money for it. This podcast is made possible by support from the Omar Smith family and the Sydney and J.L. Huffines family. Our music was composed, performed, and graciously provided by Dave Zeltner Productions, your source for quality music and music production since 1992. Find them at www.davidzeltner.com. Our opening and closing credits were provided by John Miles Productions at johnmilesproductions.com. If you have questions or comments, please send them to huffeinspodcast@hlkn.tamu.edu. From all of us at the HuffEinsInstitute, we hope you have an active and healthy week.